Welcome to Free Time with the Catman,
with your host,
Cat Ishikawa.
Calling all bozos, calling all bozoettes, it's time to board the Bozo Rocket. Our first stop will be Australia. Be careful, I hear it's dangerous down there.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
There are some people, and I'm one of them, who suspect that there is no better world than this lousy and crooked one we see all around us.
X-Tree, read all about it. Car bursts into flame on city street as detective passes by. X-Tree, X-Tree, strange disappearance of continent of Australia.
Maybe there's one or two optimists who might argue the matter. Yeah, sure. And maybe there's one or two saints left. And maybe even one or two heroes. And maybe there really is a Santa Claus. And maybe the Easter Bunny ain't labeled Friar down at the Mini Super. But you find them for me, pal. And I'll lay you several to one that you just plain made them up. Hey, little guy. Got the night edition of the National Toilet?
Here you go, Nick. Hot off the presses, whatever that means. Filled with murder and blackmail and dope and betrayal and the disappearance of an entire continent under mysterious circumstances. And be sure to read the comics. I laughed myself silly.
Thanks, Shorty.
I'm not Shorty. Shorty was a little guy. Shorty got caught under his own car the other day. They had to scrape the road to come up with enough to charge his family for the deluxe coffin.
See what I mean? Hell, the kind of goody-goodies who believe there is some better world than this, they're so few that they're what you'd have to call statistically irrelevant. But now that I think about it, so am I statistically irrelevant, and so are you. And that, my friend, is as true as the half-eaten facts of life on a cheap blue plate with a cigarette stuffed out in the cold, congealed gravy.
Like dingoes, death to the damned Australians. It is a far, far better thing we do than we have ever done.
Did I tell you my name? Well, if I did, you've forgotten it by now. And if I didn't, well, you'll find it out soon enough. And believe me, it won't mean nothing to you.
Hey, danger! You owe me money!
I'm just a grubby little guy like the rest of you poor slobs. Just a meager excuse for a human wheezing out his one sad tune on a calliope of compromise. Hey, that's pretty good. A tune on a calliope of compromise.
Hello, Nick. Long time no see.
Hello, Velma. I didn't know you spoke Chinese.
What were we talking about? Nick. When am I going to see you again?
Yeah, later, baby.
Oh, Nick.
You know me. I'm the guy in your back alley. I'm the guy under your bed. I'm the guy between your cracks. I do all the things you'd never admit that you do, only I do them better. That's what you nice people hire me for, to clean up your messes so you can convince yourself there's some better place than this.
It's time once again for the adventures of Nick Danger, America's best-loved, least-understood detective, as created by America's Take No Prisoners best-selling author, Lem Pazzo. Nick Danger. He's got three eyes and two fists and a brain the size of a ripe cantaloupe. And tonight, we present the story that put Lem Pazzo's name up at the top of the bullet-riddled paperback lists. Get ready to hold on to yourself with terror. Get ready to hold on to someone else out of sheer fear. Get ready to listen to the sensational radio adaptation of the sizzling Nick Danger thriller, Down Under Danger.
Hello, and thank you for calling the Nick Danger Detective Agency. This week, featuring a really special offer, Nick's Big Vengeance Deal. Three slimy divorce investigations for only the price of one. Thank you for calling. Did I say that? Please hold, and I'll return the favor. If you look a little like Mel Gibson. That was Australians are strictly illegal. What may I do you for?
Hello?
Hello?
May I speak to Mr. Danger, please?
That depends on your sob story, sister.
Well, let's say I'm frightened and alone, and that I have the face of an angel and the body of someone that angels have to turn their faces away from on the street in order that they might begin quickly to pray.
Mm-hmm. Well, frankly, I've heard all this before.
How did you know my name?
Are you kidding? How would I know your name?
My name is Frankie. Although you probably said frankly. Frankly is a man's name, but still, isn't it an amazing coincidence? My name is Frankie.
Whatever. Great. And what might your story be, kid? The great man don't just talk to anybody, see? And, by the way, will this be paid for with a local check or, preferably, cold, hard cash?
Oh, don't you have a heart, lady? Let me explain myself the way I do best. Let me expose myself to someone who has seen through everything already. Put me through. Please. Please.
Oh, for Christ's sake, hold on. Hey, Nick, I got a talking loony on line one.
Ruth, when did we get more than one line?
There is only one line, boss. That's why it's called line one.
Oh. Yeah. This is Nick Danger. So what, you ask? And believe me, I don't care much about it anymore myself.
Oh, Nick, you don't know me.
That's not saying much. I hardly know anyone these days. Even my best pals are walking softly behind my back with knives. So to hell with them.
Oh, Nick, I feel just as sorry for you as you want me to.
You do?
That's right. You sound the way... Oh, I don't know. You sound the way you want me to think you want to sound. Oh, Nick, you've got to help me.
Frankly, I don't think I'm much help to anyone these days.
My name is Frankie. Frankly is a man's name. And besides, how can you even say that you're no help?
Well, I can say it in a more dramatic way, like this. You see, Frankie, my last case ended bad, real bad, like a bad penny.
I hate that. It could be like a bad woman.
I like that, yeah. My last case had ended bad, real bad as a bad girl under bad light in a bad situation. Yeah, the end had come when I pumped three quick bullets into the gorgeous dame's voluptuous chest and she just flew apart like a balloon.
Like two balloons. Get it?
Yeah, I get it. That's good. Like two balloons that had taken three quick slugs after being filled full of blood red jello. Her insides gushed inside out like nobody's business.
That's it?
Yeah. Well, I suppose I need to work on that last part a little bit.
A little bit? A lot. I guess you do. Say, are you trying to write your memoirs or something?
Well, I suppose so. I mean, I don't have a deal with a publisher or anything.
Well, don't look at me. I don't know anyone in the book business.
I can't look at you. You're on the phone.
I forgot. Where were we?
Page 5.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Nick, I need to see you now, before it's too late.
It's generally too late when someone says something like that on page 5.
Well, here's something you've never heard before. I'm guilty.
Yeah?
I'm guilty as hell, guilty as sin, and you've got to cover it up. And I don't have any money to pay you with, so I guess you'll just have to take what you can get.
So, that's how this one began. And it was already better than the usual kind of beginning I get stuck with. At least she sounded sexy as all hell. We made a date to meet over at the Crippled Poodle, a cheap gin joint over in Muertadina. It was a dirty little place, the Crippled Poodle, populated with the usual collection of half-lit barflies. There wasn't one sign of the dame who called herself Frankie.
What'll it be, pal? You look like you could use something short and straight.
Hell, I'd prefer it if she was tall and kind of curvy.
Oh, great. We got us a literary type. Well, hurry it up, friend. I ain't got all day.
Forget it.
Forget what?
I don't remember. Give me a short, fast drink with a hint of something wary in it, and then stay away from me if you value your mental health. And make it snappy.
We don't make it snappy. We just pour out of two bottles into one glass and set it down in front of you with a cute cocktail napkin underneath.
You know, it wouldn't bother me at all to see you writhing on the ground with your guts punched up into what passes for a brain in your obviously hollow skull.
Jeez, I get it. We got us a kind of literary tough guy.
I looked around the place. There were lava lamps on the tables and cheap beer on the floor, and there were netted candle lamps casting weird shadows on the hopeless faces face down on the formica tabletops. There were vacant stairs and there were empty chairs and a couple of squares, and still I didn't see her. I looked around at every loser in this dingy place, and I sipped the stiff concoction the bartender brought me.
Here you go, pal.
I told myself I'd give it five more, and at the end of then I'd go. And then the door opened, and the air was still, and every head in the place turned around twice like it was raffle night at the Exorcist Club. Wow. This one was really something.
Wow, this is really something.
I had to admit there was a whole lot more woman here than I could have bargained for. Hell, I wouldn't have even known who to bargain with, except I'd be willing to bet he'd have a pointy tail and a couple of horns.
Oh, yeah, Parisian, give me a honey for me.
You must be Nick Danger.
Yeah, that's me. What's it to you?
Not much. Yet. Although you ain't exactly bad-looking for someone who looks like he's been beaten to a pulp one too many times. Can a girl sit down?
If that dress was any tighter, I'd say no, but on the other hand, give it a try. If something rips, we'll all be the happier.
Yeah, we'll all be the happier.
There. No rips. You like what you see?
I've seen it all before. Just not quite so much of it in one place.
Hi, Frankie. What'll it be?
The usual, Eddie. And hold the unusual.
Coming up, doll. By the way, this guy here, he's no damn good.
I'll be the judge of that. Are you any damn good?
Some people think so.
I don't know why I came here. I never come here.
Eddie doesn't seem to think so. On the phone, you said you were guilty of something big and you needed my help to cover it up, remember?
I say a lot of things on the phone. I don't mean a whole lot of them. Oh, Nick, what do you think?
What do you mean?
Do you think there's some place somewhere for people like you and me? Some better place where things are different?
Everything in me wanted to say yes. For once in my life, I wanted to believe it, but I didn't.
There you go, kid.
That's a big olive.
I'm a big girl.
She had me drive her out to a big house on a point overlooking the ocean. You know the place. The big waves crash on a big white sand beach that some big rich white family owns for years. It was a beautiful view. You could see all the way to Australia on a clear day with the right image-sensing satellite equipment and a team of experts in low-orbiting rocket planes. None of these types was around on this night, but then I'd heard Australia wasn't around much either. It was only this dame named Frankie. And she was so beautiful and so uncovered. And worse, there was something about her that brought out the best in me. I wanted to protect her. I wanted to cover for her. I wanted to make her mine. I wanted to go shopping for her. I wanted to let her tell me how to drive. She told me to park it in the big cobblestone driveway, and I did. And then she told me to follow her inside the house, and I did that too. Is this your place? I thought it had been confiscated early on when they found Australians up here.
No, no, it's my family's place. Watch your step, Nick. There's a dead body around here someplace. I forget exactly where I left it. Kind of a big guy wearing boxing gloves. He had a pouch. You can't mistake him.
Frankie, come on, level with me. You've got to be kidding.
I never kid about murder. It's not a laughing matter.
That's a hot one. You're trying to tell me you killed a kangaroo? That's not only crazy, it's extremely legal. All Australians are fair game now that they don't have an existing homeland, and marsupials, hell, they've been serving them up in burgers in Oregon.
Here, Nick, I guess we could both use a gimlet.
Okay.
What were we talking about? Oh, yes, Australians.
Australians.
I remember now. He tried to hit me with a lethal 1-2 combination.
Yeah?
I pushed him back on his tail, and he rolled right out the window into the surf. I saw him fall like it was in slow motion, turning endlessly over and over, finally to splash into the trough behind a big set of waves. If I'd have dropped him a few seconds earlier, he could have ridden his last wave into shore. He loved to surf.
Do you mind me asking who this kangaroo belonged to? I mean, before you killed him?
Joey? Nobody owned Joey. He'd knocked out 15 men in 14 rounds. He was his own man.
He was a...
He had a pouch, it's true, but he kept a snub-nose 45 in it because arthritis had done in his fists. He wasn't just any kangaroo.
She got up slowly then, as if to look for something. She had on red spike heels, and her stacked body was silhouetted right through the thin dress with the painted parrots on it, and the light from the evil moon streaming through the big windows, through which I could see the long lines of rollers breaking on the beach. I grabbed her, and she grabbed me, and before you knew it, her tongue was finding places in me that my own saliva had abandoned years ago. Her lithe body seemed to cup to me, and we fell to the expensive tongue and groove and tore at each other's clothes. Then I noticed something was wrong. In the darkness above us, somewhere among the curved bamboo chairs and the slanting shadows thrown by moonlight through the Venetian blinds, I sensed some kind of movement, and I went after it. Turn on some lights, baby. Let's see who the guy with the glass jaw is.
Oh.
Eddie, you big bastard. I told you not to when you followed me.
Jeez, pal, lay off of me. You really pack a wallop.
Ah, I'm finally beginning to get it. An Australian, huh?
Huh? Me? You gotta be kidding, mate. Being an Aussie is an invitation for the bounty hunters.
Oh, yeah. No one but a bona fide Australian would know what a wallop even is and how to hide him when you pack.
What are you talking about, Nick? Eddie's no Australian, whatever that is. Eddie's as American as 100% pie.
You poor kid. Is that what he told you? Your little bartender buddy here's really a card-carrying Aussie, ain't you, mate?
You're crazy. Go ahead and search me, copper.
See, typical Australian. Nobody's called anyone a copper in this country since the 20s. So you and Joey were hiding out, right?
No, he's known for his left.
Not anymore. Oh, you don't know he's dead. You don't know that Frankie here killed him?
What? Oh, no. Jojo dead? I'll kill you for this, Frankie!
Not this time, pal. I shoved Eddie's head into the wall so hard it made the sound of a ripe cantaloupe hitting a cement wall. He dropped like a stone, like the kind of big stone that falls from the top of a 20-story building with pinpoint accuracy right onto a ripe cantaloupe.
Oh!
You bastard. You didn't have to do that. He's a nice kid.
You mean he was a nice kid?
He's dead?
He's joined Jojo, I imagine. They're both singing to some reverse Southern Hemisphere angels now. Hold it, baby.
I've got to get out of here.
Hold it.
Let me go.
You aren't covered up enough to get away from here without being spotted.
I wouldn't use spots. I'd have stripes. And I'd lay low and follow existing trails of deer or wolverines or something. God, Nick, human life seems to mean nothing to you.
Only my own, sweetheart. Now, suppose you tell me why I'm here and how you're going to help explain Eddie in a world where Australians are illegal and kangaroos are dead.
Oh, Nick, it's sort of a long story.
Oh. Do you have a video version of it? Better yet, do you have a promo of the video version that my staff could review?
Nick, you're so cold.
Murder just plain cools me right down, baby. Now, here's the deal. In a minute or two, I'm going to get a steely look on my rugged face, and I'm going to walk over to that phone, and I'm going to call the cops. I'm going to tell them I've got a dead Australian and a dame that probably croaked him and his marsupial, so if you don't want that to happen, you better tell me something with at least a couple of shades of truth to it.
You won't have to call the police, Nick. You see, I already did.
I don't get it.
Danger, I'm putting you away.
What for, Lieutenant Fish?
Don't worry. We'll think of something.
They took me down to the Bay City holding tank then, and they didn't have to turn the siren on because they beat me up so bad my screams did the job. I'd been through these bastards before. No one was ever going to forgive me for the old days. When I finally woke up, Detective Lieutenant Hamilton Fish was strutting around like he owned the joint, although I could remember when him and me was just rookies. That was before the world closed in on me and opened up for him.
It's all over for you on this one, Danger. We pulled Jojo out of the bay yesterday, and there was a slug in him that had your name written all over it.
Come on, Fish. It'd take an angel to write my name on a .38 hollow point.
Yeah, she is pretty good looking, ain't she?
Frankie? She's framing me for the dead marsupial?
Hey, how about the dead Australian?
Oh, no, she's setting me up for something she probably did herself. Can't you see it, Fish?
I can see it, Nicky. Hey, believe me, I like what I see.
They tossed me back in a cell so I could think about my bad luck a little more. I figured Ruth would get worried pretty soon and send someone to look for me, but the way things were going, it might be too late any minute now.
Hey, Danger, pretty yourself up. You got a visitor.
It was her, of course. She looked great. She had on some little hat that set off the henna in her hair and nails that were as long as a bandicoot's, and her lips. And her lips. She snuggled up close to me as soon as the goon turned his back.
Oh, Nick, I'm sorry this had to happen to you.
And then she slapped me hard, real hard.
Take that, you bastard.
Jeez.
I may just be a woman to you, but that doesn't mean you've got the right to moralize about my imagined behavior. What the hell do you know about my life anyway?
Oh, yeah. What is it about dames like you? You can't stay away from Australians, can you?
Nick, you don't mind if I get a cigarette?
And then she reached into her clever little purse shaped like a flightless bird, and she pulled out a clean needle and some clean, fresh heroin, and with a little smile, she injected it right into her bare little arm. This was a new twist. I felt myself go all cold and soft. I hated needles, and, oh yeah, did I mention? She had a gun trained on me.
Ah, that's better. I'm going away, Nick. Far away from here. Just stay where you are.
Okay, baby.
Oh, that's a whole lot better.
Go ahead, baby. I've got nothing to lose. Like I told you at the beginning, I've reached the end of a road that turned out to go nowhere. What's that? Jeez. I grabbed for the bars and stared out the little window of my cell that overlooked the bay. Out in the water, a huge wave bowed just ahead of the entire continent of Australia as it hove into view offshore of the old amusement pier. So that was the deal. Australia hadn't disappeared at all. It had drifted, on purpose, if my guess was worth anything. It looked like they'd moved the whole place here so Australians running for their miserable lives could just row out to safety.
You see, Nick, Jojo knew something. Something too big. He knew there was an alternate world to this one. Another place. A place where a marsupial didn't have to strap on the gloves. A place where a gal like me could be happy.
Yeah, so you killed him. Give me a break. You're saying that the better world than this one is Australia?
You got that right, big boy. And now I'm hopping on board and I'm gonna ride that big old flat continent to wherever it takes me.
I know I shouldn't be saying this, but stay with me, baby. Let me take care of you. I haven't got a soul in this world to care about. I don't even have a cat.
Oh, Nick. There's just something about you that incites pity in a girl like me. That part about the cat really got me. Oh, I'm no damn good, and I know it. But you're not much better, are you, Nick?
Whatever you say, baby. I had to keep her talking, that's all I knew. The gun in her hand was starting to drift away from where it had been, and that was aimed straight at my private parts. I could see she was beginning to get so high she was floating. She let the gun droop a little bit more, and I saw my chance, and I took it.
We'll return to Nick Danger in a moment. But first, a word from a continent that's superior to all other continents, both in regard to fit and taste. Australia, another world. It's the land of logical alternatives. Australia, where the pulp is separated from the chaff by the winds of fresh change. Australia, where the wind comes sweeping across the plain. Australia, where men are men, and women aren't sure that's all that good an idea. Australia, where up is down, and north is south, and where the mountains plunge straight into the earth, and the seas are warm, and the rain flows up out of the ground, and animals have purses, and birds can't fly, and the beer is as nourishing as whiskey.
What the hell was going on? I could see myself lying on the floor of the cell, and I looked real dead to me. If that was true, then who the hell was I hearing voices in my head?
Sorry, Mr. Danger flew the coop. We think he's in Australia. If that's true, he's a fugitive from normalcy and probably is left-handed where once he was right.
Extra, read all about it. Australia declared outside realm of human experience. Peace returns to Northern Hemisphere. Local detective murdered by corrupt police.
Come on, Fish. Just because you resurrected me from the dead doesn't mean I ain't going to row out to the home country the minute your back is turned.
No, Eddie. I'm on a lamb myself. I wanted to row out with you.
Hello? No, I'm sorry. Mr. Danger has disappeared, and the police are denying they croaked him.
Oh, Jojo, can you ever forgive me? Ow! Don't hit me! Please!
So this was that better world that everyone wanted so much. Well, I didn't know if I wanted it. I liked being alive and in the old crooked world better. I floated like a ghost out of the Bay City jail and down the hill to the amusement pier that didn't seem so damn amusing anymore. And I watched them all getting into the clown boats and heading out to Australia. So this was to be the bitter end of this story. And while it didn't leave me with much more than the usual feelings of remorse and the usual lump on the skull and the usual empty wallet and the usual lack of a corporeal body, at least it could be finished off with a good ending line like this one. When you look back at the twisted trail of your life, like a crooked thread spun through a crooked world by the big spider in the sky, after you've eaten the fruit and spit out the pulp, after you've used up all the metaphors, there's finally only one thing that can be truly said. And, hell, I've forgotten what it is. But I know one thing. You can spell it. Danger.
But you don't need to worry, because when that finger of guilt comes swinging your way, you're not going to be here.
Oh, you're not going to transfer me, Jim. Look, I think I've got a wife and a kid in this town, and... and a boat, and I just can't...
Talk. Yes, we know. We're going to take that wife and that kid and put them all on that boat with you, and we're going to ship you all to... there.
Kansas? Oh, no.
Kansas? Oh, I'm very sorry. It's my new home. No. We're going to ship you to... there.
Where's there, Jim?
Where's there, Jim? It's the bright, rough gem of the Southern Hemisphere, Clark. Australia, Clark.
Oh, Australia.
Errol Flynn was born there. Lance Reventlow died there. And you're going to do both, Clark. You'll be located right here.
Darwin's Pit?
No, right here.
The Great Salt Walk Cemetery.
Now you twit, right here.
Well, there's nothing there, Jim.
I know there's nothing there. We haven't built it yet. Rooterville, Clark. Rooterville!
It looks like a piss-poor area for selling high-capacity computer
Very
systems.
Very keen observation, quite right. It's not computers.
That's all I know, Jim.
No, you're a much keener fitter than that. You're going to be in charge of Operation Outback.
Operation
Soot retrieval, dust recycling, and hatch grinding.
Hatch grinding?
That's the stuff.
I did some hatch grinding in the Navy, Jim, on penalty duty.
We know.
The smell, it comes up out of those hatches.
I'm glad you're acquainted with the work, Clark.
With all the stuff that's in there, and then you open them up and grind them, and the smell just comes up.
Clark, would you care for a drink to celebrate?
It takes a long time to brew a great beer, a very long time. But down here at the Darwin Breweries, we take the time it takes, because we've got nothing but time.
If you feel you've waited a billion years for a great beer, then you're ready for the hearty bite of Darwin Monkey Stout.
Because you see, great beers aren't born, they evolve and survive.
Darwin Monkey, it'll make a man out of you.
Hell, mate. Two of them will make a man out of a monkey.
The Surgeon General has determined that alcohol kills brain cells, but only the weak ones.
I just came back from New Zealand, and I want to mention I had a noir moment, and then we'll go away from that. If you go to the coffee shops are everywhere. They have great coffee. But what we call an espresso, they call a short black. What we call an Americano, they call a long black. Uh-huh. What we call a cafe au lait, they call a flat white. Uh-huh. So you go on the – and I said, you know – I go into a coffee shop and I order a flat white or a long black. I think I'm in the midst of some multiracial noir mystery.
Did the Maoris like that?
The Maoris laughed. They laughed at me, right? Yeah. You know, they laughed at me. They didn't understand a word. I played a homeland. I went played a Maori homeland, and I have a spear. I have a spear scar to prove it. And I was tattooed by them while I slept. It was their national anthem.
There it is.
The Zealand national anthem.
Let's all get under the table. Because it's get on your hands.
Take over your
hands. Get on your hands, everybody. It's the New Zealand national anthem.
Well, if I could recount to you my one favorite anecdote.
Since the theme is on, please. Well,
an anecdote?
Well, the New Zealand, I went down and played 2 weeks of stand-up in New Zealand. It's actually
it's very short stand-up
when you're down under. You're not standing up,
no,
are you?
No,
you're sitting
actually,
under or something. And I did feel gravity trying to rip me off the planet, so it is upside down.
But did the blood rush to your head?
Oh, the blood. There are no Bloods there. You know, they have a multiracial society.
It's all Crips.
It's all Crips, right. Mm-hmm. And I was in the land that invented the bungee. They invented bungee and bungee jumping. And anything over 3 feet, they tie elastic to your feet and throw you off.
Yeah, but did they tie it to anything on the other end?
That depends on the sense of humor.
That took a while, I guess, for them to figure out.
They built this huge, ugly sky needle in Auckland, like the sky needle in Toronto or the needle in Seattle, except it's extremely ugly and three-quarters of the way up. And this fucker's way up there. They have a bungee jumping platform. And you stand and you're walking down, there are people walking out on the platform, getting bound and dropped, I don't know, 300 feet. So anyway, that isn't enough. They have reverse bungee jumping. And what it is, right in the middle
down under.
You mean it's like a slingshot?
Yes, it is.
No.
Here's the story. I'm walking by this thing, and there's these two towers that they built, and they have a bungee thing that hangs down, and there's a little a gondola you sit in, right? And then at the moment, it whoop, pulls you up in the air. Here's the problem. It's right in the middle of downtown Wellington, so it's 50 feet away from an office building that houses predominantly therapists and dentists, okay? And these are trauma therapists and dentists who are like saying, now, let's just deal with the problem. You don't have to be afraid, or this isn't going to hurt. Uh-huh. And every 5 minutes, they hear, ah! As these people pass by their windows screaming. So the city of Wellington passed a law.
Sorry, but it's one of them now. Okay, go ahead.
They passed a law and that all the people in the gondola have to wear scream masks. So, I went down in the middle of Wellington one night and stood for 15 minutes and watched these people being whipped up. And you heard, these people with these big white scream masks on. And that's one of my central anecdotes from being in New Zealand.
Well, as the Maoris say, if you spit on the ground, does the spittle return to your mouth again?
I heard that all the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did hear that all the time.
Did it get any laughs?
You know, I got laughs. I got to tell you, it's a really intelligent audience, but I was up against some serious...
It's not much of a national anthem, but...
It's not a big country. There's only 3.8 million people, and there's four sheep for every one person. I was on national television as part of the gala. They had all the people in the international festival were there, myself with a bunch of comedians from the UK and including this group called Puppetry of the Penis.
Yes, who I saw in London.
You did.
And are now off Broadway in New York. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, man, I was not ready for them. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there doing, I was kind of jet lagged. I'm doing the dress rehearsal and I'm off and I'm watching this guy from Ireland doing this stuff. All of a sudden, these two guys come on in these satin capes.
Right.
Walk up, flip the capes up, and they're
completely starfish.
Naked. One guy turns around and wraps his dick around his hand as a dick watch.
The dick watch.
And I'm saying, and I'm looking up, and yeah, it's on, this is dress rehearsal. It's on television, right? Then another guy grabs his scrotum and his dick. He says, this is the atomic bomb.
Oh, yeah.
And then another one whips his dick around and says, this is the fan. Yep. And I'm going, my God.
A big fan.
And you know what? It went. They used him. National television everywhere from,
they're from
Auckland,
Australia.
Auckland to Queensland. There's these people winging their dicks around
a fan. Two guys that did it as bar games in Australia, and then they took it on the road, so to speak.
Well, I got to tell you, man, it just, I went up to them in the hallway. The guy's sitting there in his sat, and I went up. I said, why didn't I think of that? Why? I spent all this time writing this, what I think is really intelligent material. I have to memorize it, and I have to get my body movements down, and you just wrap your dick around your hand as a wristwatch, and you're a hit.
By the way, though, Peter, while you were gone, congratulations.
I'm still gone. I'm only here.
You won another award.
No.
Peter Bergman won Best Actor. You won Best Actor in a Daytime Drama.
Again.
For your wonderful work in The Young and the Restless.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm a lot older, and I'm a lot less restless.
The old and the overdosed.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that every time... Pete wins anything and goes up on stage, they'll be playing New Zealand National Anthem.
One of our own boys.
Yes,
proud of him. He's a real Kiwi. Peter Bergman. Young and restless.
Peter Bergman. That's Peter Bergman. Welcome to the festival. I said, the what? The festival. And so I had to teach them how to talk. They didn't appreciate it.
The festival.
I was in this little island called Devonshire, right off of Auckland. And I go into this place that says, greatest bread in the world. I walked in and said, no, I don't trust places like that. Yeah, this couldn't be the greatest bread in the world. I mean, how do I judge it? Do I, like, have some bread here and then go around and eat all the rest of the bread in the world? The guy's looking at me and says, what do you want? So I got a bun, and as I was about to leave, I told him I was going to go perform. And he said, break a league.
Break a league.
Break a league.
Well, they also, of course, could have said to you, marry your cousin so that if trouble arises, it will be within the family.
That's what they do,
that is,
by
the
way.
That's the way they
it causes trouble from another direction.
Yeah, sure. And by the way, he brought us some of the Kiwi money, which is shoe polish, interestingly enough.
Yeah, well, the problem is they're valuable. It's just carrying all these cans around in your pocket. It's,
Must be awkward.
Yeah, they're
Auckland. Must be Auckland.
Then. Auckland.
The Kiwi dollar is worth 44 American cents. So dollars go a lot longer there. They go a lot longer.
Like a long white.
Yeah. That's a long black. There is no long. There's flat whites.
Oh, flat whites.
Yeah.
It's a long green.
It's a great place. Their only problem is that their icon, the Kiwi, is too wimpy.
Yeah.
It's just too wimpy. So
it's got a long, sharp beak, though. I could poke your eye out.
No. I thought
it was the fruit.
No.
No,
it's
see,
the
look.
Bird.
Here, look.
It's the bird.
You know,
it's the bird.
Mike,
it's the bird.
I know how they feel.
I'm giving you the bird, Dave.
Because when I went to Pomona College, our mascot was the sage hen.
It was the sage hen. I heard about that recently.
Sage hen. I mean, you think a Kiwi's wimpy.
Jeez. Yeah.
Well, what are the... From across the wine dark seas of space, out of the 21st century, and into the sixth dimension, it's the future adventures of Commander Mark Time, Star Detective of the Circumsolar Federation.
Spike the speed, Doc. Take over the tiller, Bob. Here we go through Time Warp 2.
Let's join Mark and his cosmic companions, Cadet Ensign Bob Bunny and Dr. Technical from the Time Lab, plus their all-new, all-digital sidekick, Roscoe the Robot, navigating the known universe aboard the Federation flagship battle wagon, Pegasus 2.
Great Ganesh and Ganalaxies, Mark. There it comes over the horizon. Look at that. Clear as the lost lakes of Lithium. By gosh, that's Planet X for sure.
And darn good interstellar nav skills, Bob.
Good acting.
Oh, gosh, thanks, Commander Time. I was high points in Moon Camp.
The place. It looks just the way you described it, Mark. Especially in the last episode, which I was so fond of. It was years ago, but it's nothing but yellow sand dunes and blasted hogback.
Yes, it's a dismal but dangerous planet, Doc. Well, I guess I'd better take over the special FX drive now, Bob.
Aye, aye, Commander. I'll go heat up some alfalfa pellets for everybody.
Not for me, you overgrown Martian sandhopper.
I'll pass on pellets too, Bob.
Well, not as much as I will.
I already passed them.
Making a mega-precise landing in a wasteland like this alien planet's wacko desert takes deadhead navigation and a deep sense of interstellar purpose. Will you wake up Roscoe, Doctor?
I think he's already awake. He just made a remark.
Sounded
I think,
like
Doc,
he did,
here,
yeah.
Let me bring him up here on the keyboard.
Yes, there you
Roscoe?
Go.
Hell's bells, Mark! There's hardly enough neuromems left in this dang holo so as I can load in the helix transverters.
How do you like that copy?
It's excellent.
That's all good science writing.
That's Buddhist writers that write this kind of stuff,
right.
You know?
But
a Jew would just actually mess this up, frankly.
Well, careful, careful now.
Freudian.
Yeah.
Bob? Bob, are you there?
I forgot to zap out the zero dim sum game I got into during the long, boring part of the wine dark seas of space.
Oh, here comes the
memory. Oh, there we go.
Whoa.
Oh, nothing but negative particles now. Sorry, Doc.
Sometimes I wish they'd forgotten to download your stem cells.
Beep, beep, beep. Oh, you should wish everybody had rabbit genes like mine.
Rabbits. Oh, look there. There. Roscoe's fading in like a grease storm over Uranus now. Oh, not Uranus. I think it's my anus. Whoa, look here. He's showing off that wild wind in the hair pixelation I worked so hard to get running smooth.
Hello, Doc.
Hello.
Howdy, little Bobby.
Don't talk.
Roscoe is on.
Oh, oh boy.
Here's a pop-up joke you have chosen a light bulb bank.
Please.
How many C++ programmers does it take to change one?
Well, that's not now talk, is it, Doc?
Something
what
wrong.
What is a light bulb?
I don't know. Before my time, must be something deep down in that fella's engram.
How many, Roscoe?
Answer, none.
That's not funny.
I don't get it.
A properly designed light bulb object would inherit a change method from a generic light bulb class.
Oh.
You would simply send a bulb change message.
Oh wow. Golly, green gargoyles, Roscoe. That's the kind of typical humor I'd expect from a high-res animation.
Thanking you.
All right. Stand by to be seated, men.
And Bunny, sir, don't be a speciesist.
Certainly, certainly, Bunnies, Bob, certainly. Now I'll cut the hyperdrive and we'll drift behind the yonder dunes like a magic carpet into a rare old bottle of high spirits.
Yeah.
At long last, I return to Planet X.
Wow. Don't this beat the bats off a boomer? I've been in lots of alien deserts and a lot of lost worlds right after those acting lessons I took. But this planet X sure marks the spot, Mark.
Get your money back.
Yes, well, here we are. No matter whether you can act or not, Doc, you're still on the journey with us. And this dismal wacko desert covers all but a fraction of this nasty little planetoid. Yeah. Beyond the nameless dry lakes and tangled thorny creeper out there lay the far dung hills.
Gosh! Oh,
and so it goes, with hardly a hostile humanoid in sight. They conceal themselves in the caves at the South Pole.
Yeah, the oasis of El Petrol.
Next to the Geomancer's Garden of Fear.
In the language of Planet X, those names can only be spoken if you cover your head with both hands. Would you like a pop-up prediction?
Well,
you can choose karmic, predestined, Transylvanian,
your
mama Ben Laden.
Not right now, Roscoe, thank you.
Thanking you again.
Pull on your sandstorm boots and pack your camo mics, air breathers. We're off to the South Pole of X.
Me too.
And with our luck, the Prince of Old Noir will be waiting for us under a cold black prairie palm.
I'm afraid so, Doctor. And as you know, at the first misstep, we'll stand the risk of starting the last big war of the 21st century. Well, never mind. Let's blast!
Okay!
Set your sats to the same channel, same time warp, next data grab for the next thrill-filled chapter, Sand Spin City of Mark Tyne! Star Defector of the Super Solar Federation!
Beep, 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 beep.
Now, let's never mind. The Prince of Old Noir is waiting for us under a coal black prairie palm in the oasis of El Petrol.
Golly!
Who wrote this stuff?
Did any of you space monkeys ever see an ancient holo flicker called Bo Jesty?
Oh, rockin' retro stock, sure. Sand dunes and samurais. What wasn't that about?
Well,
that,
sort
huh?
of, Bob, but over the next one.
What, next samurai?
No, the next sand dune, Bob.
Oh, yes, sir, Mr. Tate.
Over the next one lies the largest and most fertile oasis in the Wacko Desert.
Keep walking.
The locals call it El Petrol, which, of course, in this planet's language means Garden of Fear.
Oh, boy.
Thought it would have meant Garden of Oil. Mm. Aren't you supposed to cover your head with your hands when you say that, Mark?
Well, it is a local custom.
Well, do it.
He's on again.
If you will permit me to have the opportunity to compute something helpful and so to justify the expense of my design, animation, and heightened 3D mensuriality, what kind of writing is this for a robot?
You look solid, okay, but your darn shadow's all cockeyed. And look under your boots. There's no damn footprints.
No,
you could try the helpline.
All right, stand easy, men.
Standing is easy, Commander.
Comedy is hard.
Can I stop pushing
that's
this walking button?
It's interstellar comedy that's hard, said Doc.
I think he jumped your cue.
Sorry.
Okay, are those my cues?
Yes.
Pull him out of the fire.
When we enter the outskirts of the oasis, boys, pull your cloaks up over your faces. That way, no one can know that we're genetically different.
Well, fully mutated in my case, sir. Hippity
hop. Say,
our job is to find, discover, root out, capture, and imprison the Prince of Old Noir, and so to alter the course of history on Planet X. Let's go.
Let's go.
Mouthwind.
Oh, you're in the desert of Mouthwind. Where in this oasis of blackheartedness did they hold you prisoner, Mark?
Well, everywhere and nowhere, Doc.
Yeah?
Now, remember, the tricky treachery of these Planet Xers is very far advanced.
No.
They throw a spell of a cell around you, and you're caught behind bars of your own brain.
Wow.
But we're headed for that group of sandstone towers.
Well, where are all the Xers, Mr. Time? This path is empty, and all the doors are closed. Gee whiz. How come my sound effects box isn't working?
Well, it's because you're the junior officer, Junior. Don't worry. It'll be quiet here for just a moment, Bob, and then all of a sudden...
Yeah?
Well, all of a sudden...
Your imagination kicks in, see?
Yes, that's right.
That's right, and you can imagine a marketplace.
That's right.
Ambience,
a lot of stuff going on in the marketplace.
A lot of little voices.
There you go. All right, boys. We'll meet under those towers. Find your own ways through the crowd. Be careful. And you, Roscoe?
Roscoe is on.
Oh, try morphing into something a little less combat ready.
It's a glitch in my program, Travolta virus. You could call the helpline.
Oh, never mind. And remember your Circumsolar Federation oath. Speak rhetorically and carry a big blaster.
Aye, Commander Time.
Wow. There sure are a shipload of aliens hereabouts. Looks like all the work's getting done by the six-armed Wogglebogs from Cooch Bazoom in the Bomb Nebula. Then there's all these rich-looking Planet Xers riding around in fancy bug-drawn buggies. And meanwhile, look, you got the plutocrats and the solar topies cell phoning the local army, which is standing around under the coal-black prairie palms with fully powered-up geezer blasters. Yikes! Maybe ducking down this alleyway will get me to those towers yonder faster.
Get him some oxygen. That was a long paragraph.
There's a cutting
Roscoe here. Is on. Cleverly disguising my dynamite graphics as a three-hump bacterian camel, I am chewing the infinite cud of my memory banks alongside the wall of Planet X, sacred and mysterious garden of El Patrol. Knock, knock, who's there? Afghan. Afghan who? The best played lands, Afghan astray. It is, however, my expository duty to say that within these oily walls, two stone towers rise, capped by ancient 20th century boxes, oh boom. As the magic hours of 10, 2, and 4, made holy by legendary prophet and prune farmer Dr. Pepper, the boxes boom forth a call to fear, but Roscoe is not afraid. Roscoe is only a thrilling illusion.
Prawns, prawns, prawns from the sound effects caravans of paprika
from the underbellies of aliens. The law of El Patrol says you must wear a hat.
Missiles, cruise missiles. Tom Cruise missiles! Bore your enemies to death! Voila. Missiles impossible!
By the snake pits of Sirius 5, I've got another line! And it's a big one, too. The crowds at the dad-blasted market are thicker than Mars flies on a piece of old red cheese. Maybe I can hitch a ride onto one of these Woggle Buggles. They're so crowded. Go ahead, boys. Get a sandwich. Planet Xers out there shopping. They'll never notice another fellow with dark glasses and a degree from Harvard.
It's Bob.
Golly, gamma rays! My Mark Time Global Action Finder's battery's running out. I know I'm somewhere on the south side of the North Pole, but all these sand dunes look pretty much the same to me. Well, when I'm in a really tough and perplexing situation like this, I know I just gotta do what a mooncalf-trained buddy's gotta do. Start digging!
We're too late. There's the 2 o'clock call to fear. That means everyone on Planet X will spend the next 20 minutes eyeing each other suspiciously and chanting from the Book of Phobias. I'd better just sit quietly here under this oil palm and pretend to read my copy of the book. Let's see. What a strange belief system the Planet Xers have. Telephobia, that's fear of seeing women. Deliphobia, that's fear of salami. Hillaryphobia, fear of women being too smart for their own good. Billary phobia, fear of salami, cigars, and big sticks, huh? And xenophobia, fear of never getting any.
As Mark sits patiently and fearfully under a dripping petroleum palm, Bob Bunny tunnels along skillfully toward the walls of the Palace of the Prince of Old Noir. Doc Technical, riding in a bug-drawn woggle bus, computes a few of his favorite mathematical puzzles and waits for his next overly long part. And Roscoe, lazily chewing his half-digested analogs, runs down a century-old file of knock-knock jokes. Meanwhile, within the walls of the Garden of Fear, the Prince of Noir drinks from a small cup of gunpowder tea and discusses his plans with his chief counselors, Prince Bandar Snatch and Ayatollah Falwell.
Snatch, it is truly a gift of the great god Bill that we have in less than a century of interplanetary travel cornered the market on weapons-grade warp oil.
And so we control the natural desire of all humans everywhere to hyperdrive faster and further than necessary.
Mm. And thus, to consolidate your princely powers, run Planet X as we see fit and have all the pure gold.
Pure gold.
Platinum dune buggies.
Solomon silver sit-down outhouses.
And great vintages from the cellars of old California.
Which we now rule.
Benevolently.
If strictly.
And by controlling the interplanetary distribution of holoflix about the life of the great god Bill.
Which are the only holoflix we allow in California to make?
So let it be so in the name of Bill.
Bill willing. There is, however, one problem facing us, Prince
Tell
Noir.
Me, Snatch.
The evolutionary forces of the Federation are on to our galactic scam, Bill
Even
willing.
Though we Not have paid off the rulers of Earth with interstellar fuel contracts and high-class scumbuggies.
Not to mention Sir
body covertly supporting the election of Earth President Bush W. Exxon.
Mm. Didn't I mention you should mention that?
That you did, of course.
No, but it's so delicious because Earthlings are so stupid.
Not all of them, apparently. We've heard rumors of a plot to kidnap your business and put you in a black hole for the next million years.
Even now, it is possible that members of a Federation team are on their way to Planet X.
Look out! Look out! What is happening?
It's erupting! No, only the sound effects table is shaking.
Rattling! And rolling! The ground beneath us is erupting!
Holy comet dust! It looks like I tunneled way too far. What's up, Doc?
So Bobby Bunny has witlessly penetrated the Garden of Fear, leaving his companions outside the walls. How will Mark Time know? And what will Mark and Doc do? Can Roscoe tear himself away from an inner turmoil of knock-knock jokes? Only the next episode can tell. So set your stats to the same channel, same time warp, same data grab for Chapter 3, The Will of Bill on Mark Time! From across the wine dark seas of space, out of the 21st century, and into the sixth dimension, it's the future adventures of Commander Mark Time! Star Detective of the Circumsolar Federation!
Make like motocross, Doc. Whoop a wheelie wob, here we go through Time Warp 2!
As you won't remember, Mark and his interstellar sidekicks, Ensign Bob Bunny from Moon Camp, Doc Elmo Technical from Terra Time Lab, and their all-digital, fully animated space bud, Roscoe, the irrelevant robot, have navigated themselves to mysterious Planet X! Disguised, our heroes enter the oasis of El Patrol. Mark sits patiently, if fearfully, reading a few local laws under an oozing petrol palm as he waits for a chance to infiltrate Prince Noir's notorious Garden of Fear.
It says here that the law of the phobia demands tarring and beheading if you exhibit fear of the unknown. Death and taxes for lap-tap dancing. Oh, and eternity is a fly for insufficient pubic hair. Oh my.
Doc Technical, riding through the exotic Oasis marketplace in a bug-drawn woggle bus, computes a few of his favorite mathematical puzzles.
By the snake bits of Sirius Fire. Let's see. If Bruce had 3/4 of a bag of popcorn and Bill had 7/12 of his marshmallow pickle sandwich and their lunch hour was 53 minutes long, what percentage of each food should they share after a half hour? Show your work, huh?
Underneath the tarry streets of All Patrol, Bob Bunny carries out his deadly mission single-handedly.
With one paw!
And all alone tunnels along skillfully under the walls of the palace of the Prince of Old Noir.
Oily moondogs! My Mark Time Global Action Finder batteries are running out! Well, when I'm in a really tough and perplexing situation like this, I know I've just got to do what a Moon Camp trained bunny's got to do. Keep digging!
Cleverly disguised by dynamite graphics as a three-humped Bacterian camel, Roscoe, the irrelevant robot, is lazily chewing the infinite cut of his half-digested analogs alongside the wall of Planet X, sacred and mysterious Garden of Fears. Sadly, he runs through his century-old file of knock-knock jokes.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Afghan.
Afghan who?
The best laid plans, Afghan. Astray. Ha, ha, ha.
Don't get it.
Meanwhile, within the walls of the garden, the Prince of Old Noir drinks from a small cup of gunpowder tea and discusses his plans with his chief counselor, Ayatollah Falwell.
Ayatollah, it is truly a gift of the great god Bill that we have, in less than a century of interplanetary travel, cornered the market on weapons-grade warp oil. Earthlings are so stupid.
Well, not all of them, your Noir ship. We got rumors of a plot to kidnap you and put you in a black hole for the next million years.
No, look. It's earthquake. Whoa. The ground beneath us is erupting.
Holy comet dust. Looks like I tunneled a little too far.
It's a dust bunny.
What's up, Doc? Prince?
No!
So Bobby Bunny has witlessly penetrated the Garden of Fear, leaving his companions outside the walls. Bob's ninth life passes in front of his little pink eyes. But surprise! Roscoe spots Bob through the wall, clothed in this greenish glow of Roscoe's special nightlight vision. Roscoe implodes his molecular disintegrator and immediately changes places in the Garden of Eden with a terrified space cadet.
Wait just a lunar second!
I've been blindsided by a terrorist narrator attack. I'm the star of this episode. What the hip-hop's happening here?
That's right, Bob. Your announcer is revolting. I'm doubling as Big Roscoe, baby.
What?
And I'm on. And when I'm on all over.
I'm all over.
Irrelevant. Robot my left. Tesla coil.
Hey, wait a minute.
Old email jokes, android humor. What stupid robot voice. I'm done with it, see? I don't have to be a human to act human. I'm studying to be a human. I deal with humans all the time.
And with mutants like me and clones like little Cece.
Are you telling me I can't pass for a human just because I wasn't born human? If you cut my beard, will it not grow again?
Hey. What is this, a format change?
I haven't been happy with my part, Bunny. It's totally underwritten. Just listen to that last line, for instance. Who could do anything with... It's totally underwritten.
I could!
I'm Stanislavski. Where is he when we need him? Where's the heart in a line like that? Where's the character?
All right. Just a minute there, fella. Your name, Roscoe?
Don't like it? Call my freaking helpline.
Hey, CPA, you're under arrest.
Me? But wait a minute.
Hey, I'm sorry, robot, but you're going to have to come along with us.
Yeah, we're certified rappers, robot, auditor, police.
You're accountants. Wait a minute. Why would accountants have police?
You're over budget. You're over time. You're over the top, mister.
See
and
that again.
This wouldn't be the first time you've been brought in on a hostile character takeover charge, now would it?
Well, since you've torn apart the very fabric of the illusion of this marked time adventure, the thing it needs in order to exist...
Your character...
...has been sent...
...to radio prison.
And that's how it really happened, Doc. Roscoe is gone forever.
I was on that sound effects rickshaw, Mark. Never knew what was going on. Seemed like everything went black as a lunar outhouse.
Yeah, I was dematerialized, and he stole all my material. Just as the evil axis of Planet X was about to cut off my ears and take away my sleepy time, comfort bedtime, Karen!
Well, we're all together again, the three of us in Pegasus 2. The theme music is playing, yeah. And I've got a surprise for you both.
What? Did some bozo drop a script in over the transom?
Do we have a new plot line?
Indeed we do, Bob. A brand new Space Ranger joins our team next time when we meet... The Time Pirates on Mark Time!
Hello, Israel, this is Egypt. How are you?
Fine, and you?
Well, we're waiting for your next batch of bombs. Over.
But you don't have to be bombed.
I think you'd better tell that to your Moshe Dayan.
In my opinion, you'd do well to discuss it with your friend, Mr. Nasser.
Mr. Nasser!
Mr. Nasser, bring me a bomb. Make it the biggest that you've ever seen.
Armageddon in the Holy Land, man.
Isn't it far out?
And seven F-104s appear out of the east, and riding them are seven American pilots. And lo, I looked unto the west, and there were 17 MiG fighters of the number of 17, and they were piloted by seven Chinamen, and seven Israelis, and seven Arabs.
Yes.
And we were very wrong, and we went from this place.
I will tell you about one country which was very great, though it was very small, Bobby. We call it Palestine.
Well, gee, tell me how Palestine was a great country. I mean, did it help other countries the way America does?
No, Bobby. It didn't send to the other countries food and clothes and machinery, as American does, Bun. But it gave to many great countries something much more important.
Well, what did it give them, then?
Hash.
Oh, far out!
And furthermore, this little country taught the nations about God.
God?
God.
God? You mean dog, don't you?
Shut up and let me finish,
Bobby. That's my favorite knee!
The people of Palestine thought about God more than the people of other countries did, and listened to God more.
Was he on the television, Uncle Al?
Oh, Bobby, you're such a dumb bunny.
Well, that's Bob and Bunny once again today. Bob, Bunny, thanks for being with us.
Danger Down Under from Sparks Media. A clip from Procter & Bergman's Clark Wintergreen. Darwin Select is from some comedy spots the Firesigns did for April Fool's 1997. The Adventures of Mark Time on Planet X. from their 2001 XM satellite radio show, Fools in Space. And finally, a stop in the Middle East, also from their Fools in Space show. After the Bergman Memorial brouhaha in April 2012, I had breakfast with a number of Peter's friends, as well as his daughter Lily. She told the story of the last days of his life, when instead of being cremated, he said he wanted to be buried in New Zealand or Syria, the two countries he had most enjoyed in his travels. As it was in the middle of a civil war, Lily vetoed Syria, and her dad was cremated after all. Maybe his ashes could be placed into a missile aimed at Syria, and his wish could be granted without endangering his daughter. Where will the Bozo rocket explore next? Stay tuned to Free Time with the Catman to find out.